Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside, just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
What does it say about my diseased footballing mind that the thing I'm most excited to talk about later in the pod, in fact, right before the break, is Michael Owen's Apple anecdote?
You're not wrong to be excited about that.
It's incredible. Oh my God, I can't stop thinking about it. We'll get there, guys. But it's a meme already. This is the quickest actual thing happening to meme that I've seen since that guy from the the Fyre Festival.
Billy something, right? Isn't that his first name?
The guy that suggested he would do whatever to have water transported. He would engage in
that guy,
his face.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Became meme fodder straight away.
Well, what a proud moment this is for Michael Owen to be on that, to have reached that level.
I have so many thoughts and theories about it.
Okay.
And I'm glad it took all the oxygen out of Joey Barton's completely inane and stupid tweets over the weekend, because everyone just focused last night on Michael Owen. I sent it to a friend of mine with all my questions written out. And I interviewed the guy, 2 months ago? Never gave me any of this gold.
Is this gold? Well, we'll talk about it. We have the audio, so we'll hear that a little bit later on in the podcast. Also later in the show, MLS Cup has been decided. We have a champion. It's the Columbus Crew. And so we'll obviously share a lot of thoughts on that. And we're expecting to talk to their goalkeeper, Patrick Schulte, one of the heroes of the Crew and their run to this title. He's expecting to join us later on in the program. So that should be a lot of fun. One of the big names to emerge from this season.
An MLS Cup champion at 22.
Yeah.
Starting goalkeeper. That's interesting.
Yeah. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to talk to him. Just a quick reminder for everybody out there. This Thursday, December 14th, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, we are planning to make our return to YouTube with a live stream. We want to hear from all of you. Obviously, we'll break down everything that has wrapped up with the group stage of the Champions League, because we'll now know everything with what's gone down on Tuesday and Wednesday's games. So we'll talk about that, but we'll do a little bit of year-end stuff as well. And we want all of your kind of live reactions to that in real time. So just keep your eyes open on our, we'll send the link out for people to join on all social media platforms, and it should be fun. I'm looking forward to that, JJ. It should be a good time.
Yeah, so am I. It's they were fun when we did them over the World Cup. It's very interactive. It's off the cuff. It's irreverent. It's just fun. It's fun to do it.
I should say, too, this podcast could turn into disaster at any moment. I'm sitting on a chair right now that I've had for years. And unbeknownst to me, there's a cushion over top of it, like that you can tie on to for some added support. I didn't realize this, but I lifted up the cushion recently and the chair is, I don't know how else to describe it. It's completely cracked in half. There's a gigantic crack down the center of it. It's now separated. It's two separate halves that I'm sitting on.
You sent me a picture. It's unbelievable. It's a ticking time bomb.
And I can feel it. Yeah,
it's
spreading. It's
the San Andreas fault.
As I sit, every time I make any kind of body movement, I can feel it like spreading more. And eventually it's going to collapse. So I was going to get a new chair.
Don't do that.
No,
don't do that.
I thought I would at least wait until the YouTube live stream to give people some added intrigue as to whether or not I will collapse and die mid-podcast through some shard of wood that has gone up into me. So we'll see.
Guys, he sent me a picture of this. I'm going to post it on social media. It's a death trap. It could sever. You're on about Manscaped, our sponsor, being one of the great innovations to make sure you don't get cut down there. Andrew's literally said, okay, well, if I can't have danger when I'm shaving my pubes, I'll just have danger when I'm recording the podcast. If this thing goes, you could be severed in half.
I don't actually know how it's still holding me up. It's cut in half. I don't know. I need a chair manufacturer or engineer could explain to me the physics of how I haven't fallen into this thing. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely. It's stunning. It's amazing. Yeah. And I just have an image of you just worried in bed beside Amanda this morning. And you went, you know, Amanda, I should probably buy a new chair. And she goes, oh, well, make sure. Check the stocks, honey. See if it's a good time to buy chair. And Andrew goes to the NASDAQ to check chair. Chair is down. I'm sticking with it.
We'll see how far this can go. JJ, we'll get to MLS Cup final in just a little bit, and we'll talk to Patrick Schulte. But let's start with the Premier League. A lot went on over the course of the weekend. Some really fun results. We'll start with let's start in North London with Tottenham.
Will we? Why not?
Well, Tottenham Newcastle was on Sunday. It was the last game, probably the most recent one in people's minds.
And a game you enjoyed, no doubt.
I did. I did enjoy it, certainly, as a fan of the club. 4-1, Spurs get back on track. Convincing win over Newcastle. Newcastle got a late one for good measure, but this was pretty dominant from Spurs. Here's a trivia question to lead off, JJ. So Son converted a penalty for Tottenham. It was the first penalty that Tottenham had scored by a player not named Harry Kane since this player in 2021.
Was taking pens in 2021.
Well, Kane was, but
someone else took one.
Right.
Dyer.
No. No, I believe it was Dele Alli.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Only 2.5 years ago or whatever it was when he did that. Yeah.
Things have changed since then on Walton's Mountain.
Yeah, certainly has. Great performance from Tottenham. Son was... He was fantastic in this game. He was moved back to the left out of that central role where Charlison was put centrally, and it all kind of worked. Look, Kieran Trippier, he's a great player, but this was not one for the highlight reels with him. I mean, Son just kind of had him on skates this entire game.
But let's look at Trippier's day. He had a bad day. He was under pressure all the time. He was destroyed by Son on the Odogi goal. Like, taken to the cleaners, Son just too quick, shifts the ball out of his feet, cross, and it's a great finish. Also, Odogi picking up that position centrally happened several times in the game.
Well, this is part of Ange Ball, fullbacks tucking in and playing centrally upfield. And it's like, it's
amazing.
Yeah.
But so, I don't know how many times on breakaways, I think even on the Son penalty in the second half, there's a guy charging through the center, and I'm like, who is that? Oh, it's Odogie. I think it was that move anyway. So that's bad. Then he has there's a crossfield ball he attempts to intercept on the second goal with a header, and the header just, it doesn't go out of play. It doesn't go downfield. Son retrieves, and this time Trippier tries to win the ball and sticks a foot out. And I mean, he looks like he's been twisted into knots. Remember the space and time.
Well, he swung his foot twice and missed twice. And
like a jig. As he was falling backwards as well. He was trying to do fast feet. It was really bad. And Richarlison popped up and scored. Do you remember when Messi twisted a Bayern Munich defender into knots and the internet made him fall through a black hole?
Was it Boateng?
I think it might have been. And so the internet did a whole load of scenarios where he's falling through space and time and through various historical moments. Like he turned up falling through Dealey Plaza, falling through the Cretaceous period, all that kind of stuff.
It's really fun.
I think it was good. I think that's something that could have been done with Trippier in this instance.
With the two kicks, could he be superimposed into some sort of like Rockettes number?
Some kind of an Irish jig.
Something, yeah. Him and Michael Flatley kind of going dance for dance.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that could work. Feet of Flames featuring Kieran Trippier. Carl Kinsella, who I follow, reposted Jamie, just a man, on Twitter. And this tweet went semi-viral. I don't know what goes viral anymore. But it had 302 retweets and 187,000 views, but it's pretty good. I reckon if Trent had the week that Trippier had, there'd be a petition for him to be executed by firing squad. It's so effing true. Oh my God. The debate today, the back pages of the papers, the talk sport, Simon Jordan would be in a lather. Alan Brazil would go a new shade of purple. Talking about Paul Merson would be like, for me, no, he can't play. He just can't. You know, I love the lad going forward. You know, the things he can do. But your basics, your bread and butter, your meat and two veggies, defending it. He can't do it for me. That's what it would be. But no, somehow Trippier can be directly responsible for two goals against Everton. Literally loses the power of his limbs. And lets in Everton for two goals and then gets eviscerated by Son. And will Gareth Southgate even bat an eyelid? Will the papers even talk about it? No. England's son. Perfidious Albion's boy. Not communist, red, Scouser, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Can we trust him? Is he even English? No.
Wow. That one really got you.
Yeah,
I get that. That happens sometimes. Before we get off of this one, can I present a weird takeaway that I had? Like when people watched this game who were Tottenham fans, you know, Son was brilliant and they so badly needed their captain who was, we played him, the clip of him coming off their last game, how mad he was. Like this was a great kind of lead by example game for him. Richarlison so badly needed a game where he got in a couple goals like that, especially with his feet. First goals he scored with his feet for Tottenham since he joined. All his other ones, the other couple ones were all with his head. So like those are the normal takeaways. Can I just present a weird one, JJ, that I took away from this? One day, Ben Davies is going to leave this club. Mm. And he's going to do so to probably little fanfare, not much accolades.
Muted applause.
Yeah. But that guy has gotten the absolute most out of his talent. And I mean, he has, like, time and time again, he has filled in so admirably, whether, you know, no, is it at left back? Is it at center back? Is it in a back three? It's under different managers. Time and time again, he's that guy that I feel like winning teams would love to have, a player who is, he seems to be comfortable in not being one of the first 11, but when someone goes down, he's immediately ready. He fills in. You don't really notice that big of a drop off. Look, if you ask him to play a role over the course of an entire season, there are flaws that he has in his game that would get exposed. And that's why at a club like Tottenham, he's not a first 11 player. But in these stints where players go down and they need someone to just fill in, he does time and time again, he does so well. And, you know, you never hear complaining from him about not being a first 11 player. You never hear he's happy to be a part of the club. He's just, for me, he's one of those guys that he will never get the accolades that maybe he has deserved over time for the role that he's been willing to play for them. So he was so good in this game. He had a couple moments where he saved goals from going.
Oh, listen, at nil-nil, Andrew, when Anthony Gordon is marauding down the left-hand side and he centers for, was it Guimaraes or whoever at the far post?
Was it Isak?
Isak, yeah. And he literally intercepts facing his own goal and flicks it so that Isak can't adjust his body because it was a tap-in.
Yeah.
I thought he was excellent. He's Spurs John O'Shea, I guess.
All right, sure. If you want to go with that, sure. But I know that he's not going to grab. He's just not a guy who will grab headlines. And so I thought he played well enough that I wanted to at least give my ode to Ben Davies because I think he deserves it. So props to him.
It was nice. It was very, very nice.
And a good win for Tottenham. They needed that to get back on track.
Great win. Final thing I'll say, yeah. And I'm sure you agree with me, it's amazing that Richarlison can score a brace for Tottenham in a big spot like this in a big game. And I don't think anyone is really coming away thinking, well, he's the answer to our center forward needs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a consistency thing there. For what he's been since he got there, you can't really trust him until you see it happen a few times.
4-40 is not going to cut it.
No. So, but we'll see. We'll see. It was a good performance. JJ, let's move on. Manchester City back in the win column after by their standards, a pretty lengthy spell out of it. They come from a goal down at Luton. Probably not a sentence you would expect
Andrew,
to be saying.
Who would have thought that in August, like if we go back to August, we said, well, in the first 10 days of December, Manchester City would be going to Luton to get a morale-boosting 2-1 win.
And they'd have to come from behind to do it.
Yeah, wouldn't have put it together.
Yeah, but here we are. Here we are. Something I thought was interesting. So in the end, City, they do come back. They do win it 2-1. I heard Jack Grealish speaking after the match to Sky Sports, kind of being asked about City breaking out of this funk that they were in and getting these mm-hmm. 3 points. Here are the comments from Jack Grealish to Sky Sports about that.
Listen, I think, you know, a lot of people, I think, like to talk about City and, you know, go on like it's a big crisis, where in reality we've played against very good teams, you know. We've played Spurs, who have been unbelievable, Liverpool, who are top of the league, and then we played Chelsea away and Aston Villa away, who have got one of the best records in the whole of Europe. So we've played brilliant teams. You know, we lost one and drew three. You know, it's not the end of the world, but I think people like to pretend it is sometimes. So yeah, no, I think within ourselves, you know, we knew we had to keep calm today, and buzzing to get back to winning ways.
And I should note that you've seen the clip too. He's kind of smiling through the entire thing.
Almost.
Yeah. And look, I love the guy, and I love his. You know, we've always talked about Grealish, his childlike wonderment. But if I didn't know any better, it almost seems smug.
I don't think a man who didn't know what an encyclopedia was can really generate any level of smug. I get where you're coming from. I don't think it was smug. I think some people do still operate in an ordinary world with clubs like Manchester City. You know, they still think, well, 3 draws and 1 defeat coming into that game is not, it's not reason for to call it a crisis or a collapse or anything like that. But the consistency and level of play that we've seen from City, it constitutes a major fall off. That's just because of who they are.
They've set a standard. They've set a standard where stretches like this are weird and notable. I don't think it's wrong for people, us included, who declared them the club in crisis last week on this show. Yeah. I don't think that it was wrong for us to look at their situation and feel that way.
But you're never going to get a player to say, yeah, we're in crisis.
Well, obviously.
You know, you're just, and not one that's just come off a treble. It's, you know, Grealish probably still has the taste of the vodka from Ibiza, he spent the summer partying. which apparently Guardiola was very upset with. I was listening to a podcast the other day where there was some journalists suggesting that he still remembers the way Grealish acted over the summer and was not impressed by it one little bit. Just doesn't think that's the way you act. But anyway, Grealish was just probably in good form because he's scored his second consecutive game with a goal, and probably feeling a bit more relevant in the Manchester City world right now. Yeah. And we should give credit to Luton Town, Andrew. Like, you look at the games they've given Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester City. They're a very, very well-drilled side. Now, Kenilworth Road is definitely to their advantage. But, you know, the goal they scored, Adebayo, great cross from Andros Townsend, who historically loves playing against Manchester City. But it was, you know, they're 4 points adrift. Everton's resurgence has definitely hurt them. And now that bottom three looks, I don't know, it feels like you're not going to get a ton of movement out of it with Sheffield United bottom, Burnley, and then Luton Town. And Town are now 4 points off Everton. But there's games there they'll look back on. And they'll probably look back on them fondly because they were so exciting and they were against the really, really top teams. But they probably felt they could have got more for the battle and the heart they show in those games. And, you know, they've made some clever signings. They definitely missed Chidozie Ogbeni at the weekend. He was out injured. But like they're one of our listeners called them, I hadn't heard this term in a while, scrappy. They're scrappy, but they have got a bit of quality there. And I'm wondering if Everton didn't go on this, and we'll get to them, the dice upturn, if Luton couldn't have
It's also December, so we'll see. I don't know that I'm necessarily ready to commit at this moment that the bottom three today will be the bottom three at the end of the season.
God, yeah. I mean,
if you had to stamp that in right now, you'd do it?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
Because I'm just looking at what's above them, Andrew. Everton are in a place that they probably should continue to. Stingy defense, good attack.
Yeah, I don't think it would. Attack. I don't think it'll be Everton.
Well, Forest is not, like, I mean, Forest haven't won in like it's four defeats out of five and one draw. Palace are wobbling big time on 16 points. And then Bournemouth, Wolves, Chelsea, we'll Brentford. I don't see anyone else slipping from there. I honestly think if I was a betting man, I would leave that bottom three in some order. It's going to stay that way.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's continue now, JJ. Liverpool, they go top, following yet another late win, this time over the aforementioned Crystal Palace. I wanted to ask you this because we've spoken a lot about Arsenal this season, especially recently when they went top, about this idea that, you know, they may be top of the table, but have they clicked yet? That's been a kind of a repetitive theme on this show. Liverpool now occupy that top spot. And I'm wondering if we can ask the same question about them. So I saw this from Phil McNulty, who's the chief football writer for the BBC. He had a question and answer column up, and he was asked this. This guy Tom asked him, says, Liverpool have been mediocre at best for the last month, but they sit top of the league. Is it the sign of a good team, or will their deficiencies catch up with them? And Phil McNulty answered that by saying, it's a good question, Tom. I think mediocre at best is a bit harsh, although I agree they have not sparkled. I'm still not sure just how good this Liverpool team is. What they do have is an ability to win football matches, and this has taken them to the top of the Premier League table. You can't argue with that. Is this a thing too for Liverpool that we've kind of focused on it with Arsenal, but are Liverpool also one of those teams that they may be winning games, but we're not entirely sure all the time of how they're doing it?
I would say recently, yeah. I think that there was a general perception a few games ago that, well, Szoboszlai, McAllister, these guys have clicked. They're playing well. Nunez was in better form than he probably is now. Salah is playing well, 200 goals at the weekend, we should note, for Liverpool. Probably Liverpool's best modern era signing. So you're split between two schools at this point. First of all, we're not far enough on the season to make kind of these declarative statements. But here's the two schools. They haven't clicked yet. There's something not quite right. We spoke about the Arsenal attack, etc. There's something not quite right about Liverpool. Or that's how you win titles. You grind out defeats away from home.
That is such a tricky one.
Isn't it? How do you get... I remember the title running. How many games were there? Like, obviously, Liverpool had the title wrapped up before the COVID break in 2020, before March. They really did. Or effectively.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of games. They went to Villa Park. They were losing 1-0. Late goals. You know, there was late goals in other games. There was tight games at home. I remember at home to Leicester, there was a James Milner penalty. Like, it was not all plain sailing. It was not all easy. So how do you see systems breakdown, or not systems breakdown, but fault in the system, not playing well, but still winning, versus that's how you win. You grind out results.
So this is one of the moments where this league and European soccer in general as a thing, not having a postseason format is so important. And I mean that in this sense. So Phil McNulty, what he said there about Liverpool, he said what they do have, though, is an ability to win football matches. And this has taken them to the top of the Premier League table. I have been grappling with the same exact thing, just in another sport. You all know that I'm a obsessive Philadelphia Eagles fan. And the last 2 weeks have been horrifying with the way the Niners and Cowboys have just fully dismantled them. And all season long, the Eagles have looked weird. They were 10-1, but it was a weird 10-1. They hadn't really played. They hadn't, for like we've been saying with Arsenal and Liverpool, they hadn't quote unquote clicked yet. And so you keep saying, well, they find ways to win. That's every week. I was hearing the same line. Oh, they found a way once again. So that's fine. And that makes for fun viewing sometimes and dramatic finishes. But in a sport with a postseason format, that's not good enough, because eventually you're going to play. You have no choice. A postseason format is designed where you have to beat the best teams to win. So if you have to play the Niners and Cowboys like the Eagles just did, we just find a way. Well, that stuff gets exposed against good teams. But in the Premier League, can Liverpool or Arsenal go through an entire season where, sure, the two times that they play City, maybe some of those flaws will get exposed or here and there, but that's not who you're playing to win a title. You're playing Luton and Sheffield and Nottingham Forest and Crystal Palace. So I think they can. Like, I think there is a chance where, like, look, City had their wobble and maybe they'll get it figured out. But if Arsenal and Liverpool can just kind of keep grinding out victories and finding a way to win, even if it's not their best, I think you can do it in a league where there's no postseason.
One of those two are not doing, and we'll get to that game, they're not doing that anymore. They've just stopped doing it.
Well, yeah.
And stopped doing it twice now, against Newcastle and now against Aston Villa. I speak, of course, of Arsenal. So like, they're not grinding it out. There's a new shark in the tank, Andrew, is what I would say. Before we get to that new shark, I agree with you. I do think you can 1-0 it. I do think you can grind and scrape those results out, and teams in the past have been capable of it. But if someone says they're not fully convinced by Liverpool yet, as I sit here on the 11th of December, I'm okay to say that I'm not 100% sure either.
Yeah.
I saw things I didn't think were great against City. I thought City were a step ahead, but now look at what City have been since that game. So Liverpool might not be the full package, but they might be enough of a package to win a title this year.
Well, that's the other thing too, is like this season might be different. Like we talked about with Manchester City, they may find it again. They may get back on track, but like this already feels like a different kind of Manchester City season than what we've seen in the past. So this might be a year where you can grind it out. You don't need 97 points to win a title. This might be one of those seasons where you can do it under 90. So we'll see. By the way, before we get to the Villa Arsenal game, I did want to mention one thing, because we talked about this the other day. After the Empty Stands Cup, I asked you about Liverpool and when their renovations will be complete. Actually, it seems like today might actually be the answer. They're having a test event tonight, Monday night. And if it goes well, or went well by the time you listen to this, they should be good to go for Sunday against Manchester United. Now, it won't be it's not entirely done yet. So they're expecting, if this part of the stands are full, they'll have 57,000. There's still a little bit left. And eventually, I think 61,000 is going to be what full capacity will be at this new refurbished Anfield. But yeah, all that empty stands that you see there, the next time you see them in action against United, those should be full. So
thank you for that stands update.
Yeah.
Before I get off Liverpool or Crystal Palace, Liverpool, I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, the VAR review on Watari Endo, which it was clearly a foul in the run up to the penalty that was given. What the referee is looking at for so long on the screen, I don't know. But it's just symptomatic of the doubt that VAR has put referees under, that they need to watch it a billion times, an obvious foul a billion times. the Ayew sending off, I didn't love that. I really didn't love it. I think Van Dijk has booted the ball at him. He is standing in the way deliberately, but Van Dijk has played him. So he's okay. Van Dijk's been clever. He's mugged him off. But the second one, the second foul, what, people saying, well, Elliot's breaking. Where is he breaking? He's running towards the dugouts. I don't love it. I can see why it's given. I don't love it. And I just don't think that every foul has to be a yellow. And finally, Roy Hodgson, he's bereft. He was talking to TNT afterwards, and his comments were basically along the lines, I'll have nothing to miss when I finally do leave football. He's frustrated with referees. He's frustrated with everything. It's been a tough month because he's had to apologize to Crystal Palace fans when they lost at Bournemouth. He told them, he said something that I thought was fairly innocuous. Crystal Palace fans have been spoiled over the last few seasons. And that was in response to Palace fans booing the performance against Bournemouth. And then he followed up by apologising. This is from Reuters. I am distressed by my comments and choice of word. I would be devastated if they didn't think I appreciated them. I can understand their frustration, so I owe them an apology because they've been so good to me during my 5 years at the club. Basically, the windswept Roy Hodgson looked every inch a man on the sideline, being interviewed by Rio Ferdinand, who wished he wasn't there and wished he hadn't come out of retirement for this. Oof,
those are big statements.
Now, I said that, and there was a couple of people online, a couple of our listeners, quite rightly said, come on, JJ, let him cook. Let him be, you know, let him come back in. I was like, you shouldn't go back. He had the perfect ending to his career at a club that he has such a tie to, and he did brilliantly for them. Coming back, you're only going to tarnish that. You can't do better than that. And now they sit in 14th without a win in no win since November the 4th. 4 defeats and a draw in their last 5. Eze out injured. He came back for this? Come on.
Yeah. So it's Liverpool once again finding a goal in stoppage time to win. In fact, actually, I saw this at Opta Analyst. Harvey Elliott's goal saw Liverpool win a Premier League game with a last-minute strike for the 17th time under Klopp, which, interestingly, JJ, is now more than Sir Alex Ferguson, who I think his United teams were so known for that. Klopp has now passed him. Klopp's done it 17 times, had his team win after the 90th minute, score a winner, Fergie 16. There are two managers. Oh, go ahead.
Will Klopp ring up Fergie like he did in the middle of the night when they won the league? And that's what Fergie said. Apparently, Fergie, I was in bed and Jurgen called me drunk. So I wouldn't do that to Fergie. Jesus.
No. So Liverpool teams under Klopp have scored winners in the 90th minute or later 17 times. There are actually two Premier League managers who have more to their name. You want to guess?
Premier League late winners.
One of them is active currently. One of them is not.
Can't be Moyes.
It is 20. Wow. Second most. There's one with more than him.
And he's not active.
Not active.
Foreign.
Who?
Or is he foreign or is he English?
Foreign.
Or Scottish or?
Foreign.
Foreign. Wenger.
Yeah, there you go. 21. 21. So Moyes could catch him.
Moyes and Wenger together at last.
Yeah. How about that? Let's move on now, JJ. Aston Villa, we mentioned them earlier when we were talking. They hold off Arsenal 1-0. It's interesting. I actually thought Arsenal played fairly well. So many near misses in this for them. So many quality scoring chances that they just did not convert. And then one that they finally did in the 90th was disallowed, somewhat controversially. That was also looked at for a long time. Dale Johnson talked about it was the handball kind of on a goal mouth scramble. It was hard to see what had happened. You had to look at it many times to see whose hand it was, who wound up scoring it. Was it Havertz or Nketiah? Ultimately, it was Havertz's hand, and it was Havertz who converted it and scored it. And Dale Johnson said, if Eddie Nketiah had been the scorer, the goal would count, as Havertz's accidental handball would be irrelevant, but it was clearly scored by the latter. It highlights the bizarre nature of the two-tier handball law, JJ. The ball accidentally touches a defender's arm, Matty Cash in this case, but there's no offense and he can play on. A second later, the ball accidentally touches an attacker's arm and he's now effectively locked out of being able to score a goal.
Oh, it's crazy.
The handball law. Oh, the handball law. We have, you know where I'm at with this now? And I've said many times that I throw my arms up and I just give up with what is or isn't. Whatever they decide, I accept it. We've tried breaking this rule down into just the finest of fine powders, but it's all nonsense. If it hits the arm first, if it's an unnatural position, if he's making his body bigger, ball to hand, hand to ball. We have tried it all with this rule and none of it really works. There's never going to be clarity. You know where I finally am? I would love it if we finally get to a point where we can open up the rule book for the Premier League and just turn to the section on handballs and it's just five words. It just says, let's just wait and see with like a shoulder shrugging emoji. And that's the whole section on handballs. Let's just see. Let's see what happens. Because that's what it is. They can write it out however they want, but we are in full on. Let's just see what happens and we'll figure it out.
Well, last week in Europe, a definite penalty against Tino Livramento was not a penalty the next day in a similar situation with Scott McTominay. So, you know, it wasn't a handball. It is a handball. I think we need to get the boffins together, the eggheads. Get them to give us one clearly defined rule.
But but you're searching for something that doesn't exist. There will never be a clearly defined rule for what is or is not a handball. We've tried it all.
Yeah.
So let's just see.
It's the same as so many things in football. So many gray areas. And what about Villa though? I thought Arsenal played decent. I thought they did. I didn't think they were bad, but they were particularly blunt in the attack. And I think Martin Odegaard, he's going to look back at it, and I think there's two chances he'll want back desperately. And one of them was where he's in the box. He's got defenders in front of him, but he's in such a good position. He fakes them right, pushes it onto his left, and then curls a weak shot that Martinez deals with. But I think, Andrew, that we've talked enough about Arsenal. We will talk more about them. You know they're always going to be on the tip of our tongue. We don't talk enough about Villa.
I did last week. How dare you?
But listen, Villa are legit right now. Aston Villa have become, this from Opta, the fourth team to play the previous season's top two in consecutive Premier League matches and win them both. After Liverpool in December 2000, Southampton in May 2001, and Manchester United in December 2002. Statement. Can we play the John McGinn goal? Because from fullback position to wide midfield to the penalty box, it's one of the best goals you'll see in the Premier League this season.
Slipped on by Tielemans, taken up by Bailey, driving at Gabriel. It's Leon Bailey. It's John McGinn!
That noise as well at the Holt end. That's why. And I thought, actually, and I hate having to patronize Peter Drury, but that was a good call. It wasn't too much. It was a good call. They are flying. That's good. I like that.
He's very good.
He is very good when he, you know, doesn't go to Prometheus Unbound or get deep in his poetry. But just John McGinn kind of sums it up a little bit for me. With Villa. Like, if I went back, rewind to the summer, Andrew, and I asked you, what top six club is going to go and make a bid for John McGinn? Which one?
I don't know that there would be one, yeah.
Look how important he is to Villa. Mm-hmm. Look how he struggled, I would say, with Steven Gerrard. Not that he wasn't a good player, not that he couldn't produce, but he struggled under Steven Gerrard. The coach in Unai Emery's done there is been brilliant. Yeah, players have been bought. They have, but the coaching is just fantastic. It really is. And I was thinking a bit more about Emery. And I think we can probably now say that close that chapter on the Arsenal thing. after the weekend. It was, even if the last decade of Wenger was sometimes or quite frequently toxic, it was still such a big ask for Emery to come in and resurrect Arsenal after him. And that failing in that job doesn't really represent his ability as a coach at all. And we've seen that now. And my question to you is, how far can Villa push this? How far can they take this?
Well, I saw they're referring to it as the T word. We're not going to say the T word. They're not acknowledging that they're in any kind of title contention, which is probably smart. However, I mean, I don't, they're fully in Champions League contention. There's no question in my mind that they can stay in that race. Title contention is going to be, I think that's going to be very difficult. I mean, look at some of the clubs around them. They just can't afford. Look, you never know. I mean, we've seen, you know, some of the seasons when Liverpool were going toe to toe with City, they were fortunate with players staying healthy. It can happen. The year that Leicester City went on and won, I mean, look how healthy they remained all throughout. They pretty much had the same starting 11. It felt like the whole season. So if something like that should occur here and Villa can stay healthy and don't have to worry about dipping into what's on the bench, then who the hell knows? You know, maybe they can stay in this race all the way until the end. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but that would be the part that would worry me, that at some point, you know, guys drop out of form. You don't have the reserves on the bench. Like Doku goes down and Grealish is, there's no drop off. If anything, they look, you know, he scored in his last two games. De Bruyne is still going to come back. John Stones is still working his way back in for City. It's going to be hard for Villa to kind of stave off them.
Do you think if you're Jack Grealish, you just to be part of this in your hometown, what they're doing right now?
What a question.
Whether you pass up that treble last year or just to be a part of it.
Yeah, boy. So you're asking, like, what would mean more to Grealish, who was an Aston Villa kid, finishing, let's say, finishing fourth with Villa or completing a treble with City?
I think I know.
I think you want to think you know. I think there's a romantic in you that wants to believe Villa is absolutely the answer.
I think so. I kind of feel that it would be for him if you were to give him truth serum.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Get him drunk in Ibiza.
I couldn't even muster a guess. I'm not going to try.
Yeah, no, I think I can.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. They're fun to watch. I mean, they really, it does feel like they're back when you see the atmosphere in that place and how loud it was. We'll see how far they can take this. It's pretty interesting. Let's see, JJ Everton. We'll see how far they can take this, even with their 10-point deduction. They're 4 points clear, is that what you said, of the drop zone after beating Chelsea 2-0? We can get to the Everton side, but I saw Poch afterwards kind of, I mean, he just looked, when the whistle blew and they kind of panned to the sideline and his face, it was just like a 1,000-yard stare, just blank. I just was looking at him thinking, what is going through his head right now? He kind of danced around the idea afterwards that Chelsea need to be active in the transfer window in January, which I'm sure is exactly what Todd Boehly wants to hear after he spent over £1 billion on this team since the summer of 2022. You know what I think? That's what I said the other day. And I saw Nicholas Jackson after the match. He had another bad game. Ball fell to him right in front of goal and just slow to kind of react to it. He was, after the final whistle, he was angry, fighting. Who was it? Patterson for Everton. Something was going on between them. I mean, he's just, like I said, like, I don't know. Maybe they need to dip into the window. My whole thing is I just want to see what they look like with Nkunku back in the lineup before we start talking about having to, like, overhaul the squad again. I just want to see what they look like with what was their most important signing playing for them.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get what you mean. I'm all about Everton from this game, though. Just, they've just been brilliant the last few weeks. They've been really, really good. Out of a hodgepodge of a squad that you would never construct, willingly construct, if you had the money. You just never do it. I'm going to have Ashley Young and Jack Harrison on the same side of the field. What? No, you just wouldn't do it. But they've been so well put together, so well coached. You got to give Dyche credit. You really do. We all wondered, was Dyche kind of a throwback? Was he kind of a almost a Sam Allardyce for this era? But he's proven himself to be effective. The team going into these games have been sixth best defense in England. He's been able to get, you know, young players to kind of contribute. Like, look at Jared Branthwaite. I think he's 21. Was Southgate there watching him? I think he was at the weekend. Like, he's been in fantastic form. The ability for him just to put things together, get a group of disparate entities together and make a team out of them. There's a stat, Andrew. You can plot the Dyche effect. Everton non-penalty expected goals difference. So there's a graph basically, and think of it like almost like a heart monitor beeping. And there's a red line relegation form. So from Lampard's appointment, it's kind of been there all the way, in and along the relegation form, occasionally dipping up, but mostly under or just above it. And then Dyche is appointed, and it goes on a little bit like that. And then there's the Newcastle home game in April 2023, and that's some kind of a breaking point. And since that game, the turnaround, it's just spiked. The spiked up to the green line, which is above that, which is European form, is amazing. It's truly, I love, by the way, I love explaining graphs on a podcast.
It really works. It works very well.
It's so good. But yeah, the spike has been just quite incredible under Dyche, and he deserves so much credit for it. And I still don't think in the truest sense of the word that Everton are a good team. Is this a good squad? I would still say no. You cannot doubt what they've been able to pull together. And again, Harrison, McNeil, guys like that have been really, really good for Dyche. And, Everton fans should feel great. Docked 10 points, and they literally took that 10 points, chewed it up, and spat it back at the Premier League and said, what do you got for me next? 20? Because I might struggle with that, but try me. Try me.
Well, easy. Easy there. Let's see. JJ, Manchester United continue to be able to just take momentum and talk about throwing things right back at the Premier League. Manchester United, momentum.
Chelsea stink.
Stink. Yeah. I've moved on. I'm on to United, JJ. I'm talking about United and how they have lost.
But it's just a reflection. You know, the feel-good win for United is suddenly just obliterated by Czech's notes, Bournemouth.
So, Bournemouth, I just want to talk about them for a sec because this has happened quietly, but there's something going on there. So they got clobbered by Man City 6-1 back on November 4th. Since then, and maybe we saw that score 6-1 Bournemouth. Oh boy, okay, we don't have to think about them again. But since then, they've beaten Newcastle, they beat Sheffield United, they drew with Villa. Only when Villa and Ollie Watkins scored in stoppage time to equalize, they beat Palace, and now they just beat United 3-0 at Old Trafford. There's something going on where this manager, Andoni Iraola, has had time, and it's starting to happen for them. You watch the way they play. I've got to believe that they're probably one of the most frustrating teams to play against. You used the word scrappy earlier when we were talking about Luton. You could, find a synonym. I mean, it's kind of a similar thing with this side. The way they press, with how pesky they are in that middle third, they've got the third most tackles of any club in the middle third of the field, seventh in tackles in the attacking third, same as Liverpool, by the way, more than City, fourth in ball recoveries. They just do all the things that a team would do that you wouldn't want to play against, that would just be annoying and frustrating, and they've taken to it. Watching them on the counter for two of their goals in this game with Solanke, with the form that he's in right now. This was not a fluke that they went to Old Trafford. In fact, it was very nearly 4-0, but like another lengthy VAR review on a handball wiped away a fourth goal for Bournemouth in stoppage time. I mean, this was not a fluke. United were booed off the pitch. Bournemouth earned this one. They left no doubt, at least on this day, who the better team was. And you got to give Iraola credit, because this did not look like it was going to be heading this direction. And they took a horrifying beatdown and in the blink of an eye turned it around and have caught fire since. And now, in a season that might have been steamrolling towards relegation, they look like they might be one of the clubs that is kind of aiming now more for mid-table.
Exactly. And they headhunted one of the best young managers in European football. And people were surprised when he went there. I suppose not. Is anyone surprised about anyone going to the Premier League anymore?
I don't think we can be anymore.
No, we can't be. You're right. But still, the fact that he rocked up there it raised some eyebrows. Dominic Solanke said, "I think we've just started clicking. And we've definitely started gelling in the last few weeks," as showed on the pitch. Iraola then also he did a Brendan Rodgers. This is the second time this has happened to United in the last like 2 years, where a manager in a press conference basically comes out and says, "This is how you beat them." It's like, God. They sent a lot of players forward, so you will get spaces. We knew they would make our wingers run backwards, but we knew when we could recover high, our forwards would have space. We knew in transitions that we would have our chances, and we took them. So, because there was a lot. There was a Man United fan listener saying, "You know what? Well, we didn't play that badly. We had plenty of the ball. Blah blah blah." I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You basically played into the Iraola trap, and I don't know how this gets better for United. I truly do not.
They just can't string wins together.
They can't, but like it's deeper than that. You can say, you can talk about the Glazers, and like structurally, United are all wrong. We know this. The football operation is wrong, but this manager has been backed. He wanted a boatload of money for Anthony. He got it. He wanted to buy this keeper. He got it. And then the next thing, he's going after Amrabat. Amrabat's been a fine player for Morocco. I can't say I saw much of him in Serie A, so I really can't comment. Andrew, he looks so slow and off it. It's scary. He doesn't look like a Premier League footballer. Now, he may find his legs, whatever, but I just don't see it. Like, what point do they just... I mean, Gary Neville called it ridiculous that Ten Hag would be sacked, but we saw it under Van Gaal. We saw it under Mourinho. There comes a breaking point at this club where the board are like, this isn't good. And I can tell you how much they make, even when they're bad, and they do make a lot, but...
Well, hopefully it's about more than just that.
But, for the owners, doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah. Finally, I don't have much on this. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to Fulham, because if you're sitting down for the weekend and you just want to watch a game with goals, Fulham right now is your pick. Back-to-back 5-0 wins, which came on the back of scoring 3 and losing against Liverpool. And before that, they scored 3-1 against Wolves. And fun goals, too. I mean, they scored 5 goals in this game on a 2.63 XG. So that's like a high-quality goal that they're scoring there. Wilson playing really well. Raul Jimenez scoring again. So right now, if you're looking for goals on your Saturday or Sunday mornings, Fulham. Fulham, JJ.
As for West Ham, Moyes out was trending just a few days after beating Tottenham.
Yeah,
after
right. People got to relax a little bit. He won them a trophy a few months ago. He beat Spurs midweek. You know, they come back. Yeah, a tough turnaround maybe for Fulham. I don't know. Moyes out?
Yep.
I have an issue with that.
I kind of do too, but he's never been 100% comfortable there.
No, you're right.
Despite what, doesn't matter what he's done, whether he's seen as a representation of the ownership or whether he's seen as a regressive manager, the West Ham have... They like him. They like him quite a lot when they're doing well. But the minute there's a couple of run of games or a bad result, that's it. He's getting pelters.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the Premier League.
Sorry to cut across you. I'm doing that a lot today. I apologize.
All right. No.
Yeah. Are we doing Michael Owen's anecdote?
Oh, sure. Yes.
I mean, I think we should. Can you play this? This is him talking to, the Upfront podcast. Yes, the Upfront podcast, which is hosted by a Talk Sport presenter and former owner of Crystal Palace.
You know, everything was a challenge. I'd eat an apple in the, watching the TV at night. Right. and the bin would be by the TV, you know, 6 meters away or whatever it was. And, well, I would just do it. I had the bravery to miss and for there to be a stain on the wallpaper and my mum to absolutely scream at me and send me upstairs. I wasn't cocky at all, but the next day I'd do the same and I'd be bump and it'd go right in the middle and my dad would give me a nod of approval and my mum would be seething but couldn't say anything because it went in. And that confidence, that sort of daring, that nod of approval, that I don't want to get bollocked by my mum here, but God, I'm desperate for a nod of it, like a little wink to say from my dad to say, bloody hell, you cocky little, you know. And that's what I always yearned as a kid.
That was Michael Owen talking to Simon Jordan, Andrew. Wow. I mean, it's hilarious, but there's so many questions. So can I just begin with the first one? Who puts a trash can beside their TV?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the layout of the room.
So there's the TV is against the wall. There's a trash can against the wall. The second question, which was posed on the internet, was why didn't his mother, if she's said about stains, apple core stains on the wallpaper, why not move the trash can? The next thing, the words he used, the daring, the confidence.
So this is where I have an issue. I think he's working a little too hard at finding a thing that is entirely common among every child on planet Earth. I think he's working too hard at finding one of those things from his own life to show the bravery that was instilled within him at a young age. Every kid has that story.
Yes. And an acknowledgement from a parent is a real thing.
Sure.
Some of the headlines, though. Oh, yeah, the yearning. The words of you. I yearned for that. Here's another thing. I don't know about you. Maybe you are. Are you an everyday Apple guy?
No. I like them, but I mean, it's three a month, two a month. I don't know.
Right. Who is eating apples at a rate enough for this to be like an event in the house? Michael's eating apples again. I'll turn the TV on. You know, like, it's just so weird. It's just odd. And by the way, that amount of apples, you know, if you eat the Granny Smith or one of those type of apples, you'll get diarrhea, you know.
Yeah, you got to look out for it. Maybe he suffers with that, but it's worth it.
Incredible. The yearning. Like, I agree with you. I think we're at a point now, and I've noticed it a bit with Roy Keane and the different platforms he's on, where Roy Keane is telling the same story over a few times in the last 2 years, and it still gets clicks and it still gets likes. And I think we have such a saturation of ex-footballers telling either banter, traumatic stories, or stories of redemption, right? That they're straining themselves every sinew to find some new angle that they can make content out of.
Yeah, like we're working too hard to display our bravery. Oh my God, if this is throwing an apple core into a trash bin, look how brave it. The number of stories I could tell you about is Luke brave? Oh, the bravery he's shown for the number of times he's punched me in the nuts. Oh, what bravery from a four-year-old. And when I was four, I knew there was a chance that he'd come back at me, but I was brave. I mean, it's once a week he does that. Is he going to be telling this story on a podcast one day?
By the way, between the chair and your son smashing you in the nuts, you're putting your gonads through
it's
serious
peril. It's a fragile existence. Yeah. You should you got to get Owen on again because he was a great interview last time. It's one of my favorite interviews we've done in a while that you did. I'd love to go deeper on this. Just to give us the layout of the room. Is this in the kitchen? Is the TV in the kitchen maybe? And he just didn't make that clear. I don't know. Lots of questions.
It sounded like the living room.
That's what I thought too. At any rate,
trash
that's a good find.
In the living room.
It's a good find there. That's very interesting.
And of course, one of the memes that has come out of it is, you know, there's the meme where there's the girl lying in bed concerned and the guy with his back to her. Is he thinking about other women? And he's thinking, why was there a trash can beside the television. Why didn't she just move the trash can?
Let's all have a good think about this during the break. We'll be right back on the other side. A little bit of an MLS Cup discussion. Patrick Schulte, goalkeeper for the 2023 MLS champion Columbus Crew, joins us next. More Caught Offside still to come.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, we have a champion. Columbus Crew, they win their second MLS Cup in the last 4 years, third overall. Congratulations to them in front of their home fans. And, you know, we both picked, we had the right score. We both said 2-1. So we were half right. We just had the wrong champion in LAFC. So I'm wondering kind of with that, what surprised you with this?
I thought Columbus were excellent. I thought they carried the most threat. I thought their game plan was executed the best. And we just had this feeling that they're going to commit people forward and low percentage possession. LAFC are going to do them. They're going to catch them. And it kind of never happened. Not really. And, okay, you can look at the shots on target, 5 shots on target each, but the only time I felt, uh-oh, are they beginning to tick was actually when LAFC got that goal. Otherwise, I mean, I was just really, really comfortable in what Columbus were doing. I think the home crowd was such an advantage. I really do. I thought they created an amazing atmosphere there. I never really worried after Columbus went 2-0 up. And that in an MLS game is a huge thing to say, considering the swings that you can have, considering the swings that Columbus even saw themselves when they went 2-0 down to Cincinnati and had to come back.
Yeah, I think some of the things that maybe we got lulled into with LAFC had to do with the previous opposition. Like the thing about the Crew that's different, like Ryan Hollingshead had talked about, how, you know, we'll concede possession. Sure, go ahead, have 70% of the ball, but what are you going to do with it? Well, against Seattle, against Houston, yeah, I think that that's true. Those teams don't have a cutting edge that can necessarily take advantage of the opportunities that they're presented with. But you give Columbus that amount of possession, they're going to score. They're going to score goals. They were shut out twice all season, once in April and once in August. And these playoffs leading up to this game, they'd scored 13 goals in 5 games, over 2.5 goals per game in this postseason for Columbus. So like it's a very easy thing to say that against teams that don't have the sort of attacking personnel that a team like Columbus has. They're going to get goals.
And I thought Columbus were able to pick passes. Like the pass on the second goal is one of the best passes you'll ever see.
Oh my God.
Oh, how good was that? That is just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, LAFC weren't compact. Like, we thought they would be. We thought they'd be difficult to defend against and or difficult to attack against. And they were the exact opposite of that. And there is a shot just after Yeboah scores. It's a brilliant finish, too. Draws the keeper outside of the boot. Great finish. Of Chiellini just coming into shot, like he's nowhere. They got absolutely opened up down that down the right hand side. Like, and there's even a massive gap between Chiellini and the centre back that's come across the cover. It was far too easy. Also, Columbus starting with the penalty, Andrew. Talk about handing an advantage to them. Literally handing it to them. Can't do that. It's a clear penalty for me.
A tough one, though, because it is one of those off the chest.
Yeah, yeah. But it's,
which,
I mean,
which adds a layer of complication.
It does, but it almost feels like it double touched his hand when it was in the air. All the things I thought LAFC would be to spring the counter, they weren't. They weren't compact. They weren't well organized. And Columbus's game plan worked to a treat. And Wilfred Nancy was, I mean, he was vindicated in all he's done all season. People were talking, can you win playing like this? Can you win with that commitment to attack? And clearly you can.
Well, I'll tell you what, JJ, let's continue talking about Columbus and their 2023 MLS Cup title. And let's do so right now with one of the stars of the team of this entire run of this season, really. Their goalkeeper, Patrick Schulte, joins the show now. Patrick, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Living a good life right now. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about that specifically, living the good life right now. Can you take us behind the scenes of what the days following a title look like? What happens after the game? Where do you go? Who are you hanging with? Can you just help us live vicariously through this moment?
I'll try my best. right after the game, it's obviously you're filled with, you know, a bunch of emotions, a bunch of joy, just, you know, being grateful for, you know, all the hard work, the position that you're in, but as well as celebrating, you know, with all the guys that you've been working hard for the last 11 months with. And obviously from my standpoint, I had a lot of friends and family in the crowd. So being able to celebrate, you know, as much as I could with them, kind of right after, you know, the celebrations on the field with your teammates took place. So, you know, it's just been a lot of that, honestly, just celebrating with friends that, you know, came up and some of the family that stuck around the past 2 days. And then just, you know, hanging out with all the guys and just, you know, sharing the memories that, you know, you created either that night after the game or in the locker room, you know, because it's more of a like a college recap of the Sunday after a night out. That's probably the last 2 days.
Like at 22, you couldn't have foreseen this. Like are you pinching yourself? Are you looking around? Have I actually done this?
Yeah, you know, I to tell my friends the past couple of days, it still like doesn't feel real to me. Obviously, at growing up and, you know, being in the situation and playing, you know, in games, you know, I set a high bar for myself. So I always, you know, knew that this team and myself could, you know, win an MLS Cup. But now that it's happened, it still doesn't feel like it's real to me yet. I don't think it'll feel real until I kind of go home and just like kind of can relax and just process everything that's happened.
Along the lines of that sort of pinch me mentality, I wanted to ask you specifically about something that happened late in the match. So I think it's the 89th minute, and you had a moment where Giorgio Chiellini knocks into you and you go down and he seemed irate. And I'm wondering if in that moment, you're kind of thinking to yourself, I'm here winding up Giorgio Chiellini in the dying moments of a cup final that my team is about to win right now. Look at my life. Do you have time to think that as that's transpiring?
I honestly didn't think about it until after someone mentioned it to me, like, you know, you had Chiellini fired up and to kind of sit there and think about it. Like, you know, one, I was sharing the field with such a legend. And I think that's what's, you know, so great about this league is becoming is, you know, we're getting, you know, bigger and bigger players each and every year. And just being able to share a pitch with guys like these is something that I always, you know, remember forever. But to play against him and kind of wind him up in a cup final, like, never would I have thought that I would, you know, be able to do that. But, you know, it just puts a smile on my face to, you know a player like that I grew up watching and that I have so much respect for, to kind of wind him up in a situation like that. It just honestly puts a smile on my face and, you know, I'm forever grateful for it.
As you reflect on the final and the conference final, which game did you feel more pressure in? Because you had a local derby, you go 2-0 down in it. And you have to claw your way back, and then you have a final. Which one kind of hit you the most?
That's a tough question, because I think in each way it's, you know, they both kind of hit me. You know, it's to be, you know, MLS Cup champion obviously is the end goal one. So I, you know, that feeling is there's no better feeling. But that Eastern Conference final game was crazy. And you know, in the Derby match, being down 2-0, like you said, you know, and coming back and winning an extra time away at their place, I think it meant a lot for not just the team, but for the city as well. You know, because, you know, these fans are, you know, they love the Columbus Crew, and, you know, there's no one that they hate more than Cincinnati. And so, you know, to do that at their place, to win a trophy on their field, it wasn't just for us, it was for the city. And it was more of an opportunity to now then host an MLS Cup in front of them. And so I think that one was special because it added more to this, to be able to do more for the city than the final did.
Can I ask you what was said? Sorry, Andrew, what was said at halftime? Like, I mean, to come back from that against a bitter rival, was there something specific that was said that inspired that comeback?
Yeah, I mean, Wilfred's just—he's as cool as can be always. No matter the stage, the situation, you know, he keeps the same demeanor. And you know, everyone was kind of a little frustrated because we had the ball, we were creating chances, we just didn't score, and we gave up a late one right before the halftime whistle. So, guys were frustrated, but he came in and was just like, guys, last time we played in Cincinnati, we were down 2-0 half. We came back, made it 2-2. And, you know, we wound up losing 3-2, but we were always on the front foot and we were able to come back. And he kind of just came in, like I said, cool and calm, and just kind of said that and was like, guys, we just need one goal, change the momentum. Let's just focus on getting that one goal. And everyone kind of like realized his, you know, demeanor and how calm and confident he was. And everyone kind of just started to rally around that. And then, you know, going out into halftime in our halftime huddle, our captain, Darlington Nagbe, who, you know, who we all play for, was just such a legend. He broke down and was just like, guys, like, we got this. You know, he was crying, like tears in his eyes. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was like, we're not losing this game. And he wouldn't let us lose that game, just, you know, with how emotional and how driven he is.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about him specifically. I mean, there are a lot of key pieces on this team, certainly, no doubt. But him in particular, can you describe some of the ways in which Darlington Nagbe is so vital to this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first and foremost is he's a baller. He's one of the, if not the best midfielder to, you know, play in the MLS, and American wise, you know, I think he's one of the best to ever do it. And so I think that, you know, just his play in general one, but then as well as his leadership of just being that calming, you know, no thing's ever too big for him. And, you know, he's playing bad, he's playing good. It doesn't matter. He stays the same. Each and every day he's putting in the work. And, you know, when he doesn't say a whole lot, he doesn't say a whole lot in terms of like motivational stuff, but when he does, you know, that's when you really know, like, that he means it. He's there. He wants the best for the group. So honestly, it's just, he's got so much respect in this locker room that, you know, we go as he goes.
Apart from saving the ball, which is your primary job, let's be honest, that's what a goalkeeper has to do. We've heard a lot about Wilfried Nancy, about the way this team plays, but in terms of, say there's a cross coming into the box, you catch it, you're looking to break. What are you specifically told by the manager? Like, what's your role in terms of starting things? What's the key principles that you have to do? Because the days of booting the ball down the field are gone. You now have to initiate attacks. What do you do, Patrick?
Yeah, it's taken a lot of learning moments and a lot of conversations with Wilfred. But the one thing he always tells me is be courageous, be brave. He goes, and enjoy picking them apart. And he goes, you know, you're not a 10, but you're a playmaker. You're another center back.
Right.
And so just, you know, him having that trust and confidence in me, it's given me a lot of, you know, relief off my shoulders that he's like, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to turn the ball over, but this is how I want you to play. So, you know, just I'm always looking for outlets, looking ways that I can exploit them or the team can exploit our opponent. And so just, you know, but it starts with, you know, him having that trust in me and the team that, you know, we're going to play the way he wants to play and that's all he wants. So I just, you know, sometimes I get caught up in the moment and I have to, like, you know, take myself back a couple steps and like, all right, be brave, be courageous. You know, this is how he wants me to play. Go out there and do it and just kind of go back to the basics of what we do on the training pitch.
So is your natural instinct sometimes if you see something that's on not or something that's risky, is your natural instinct as a keeper, don't do that, wait a few seconds, whereas he's encouraging you to do it?
Yes, 100%. You know, there's been times this year that, you know, it's been, you know, Cucho out on the break, but it's a 2v1, but, you know, he's got a little bit of space and he'll laugh and be like, play this ball. I want you to play it. If it doesn't come off, it doesn't come off, but I see the idea and I see the intention that they're wanting to do. Or, you know, if they're, you know, stepping their center backs and someone makes a ball in behind, but I have a short pass I can play to our center back, you know, he's like, mix it up, the different variations, play that ball in behind to keep everyone honest. So kind of just finding the balance of, you know, keeping the ball as well as taking risk and, you know, the risk reward aspect of it all as well.
As a modern goalkeeper, that massive save you made against Cincinnati to make sure it didn't go to 3-0, because that felt like an insurmountable mountain. You saved that one. Which gives you more pleasure, a big save or pinging a pass 35 yards out to Cucho or to Rossi or someone and finding them on the break?
That's tough. Honestly, depends the situation. But like that Cincinnati, the save that I had, obviously in that moment, I'll take that because obviously, like you said, you know, 3-0 down, it's a bigger mountain to climb. And so in that moment, I'll take a big save. But, you know, a 30-yard ping pass to start a counterattack to, you know, score a goal and make it 2-0 or 1-0, I'll take that because that's what we're – my job's to save a shot, but, you know, I can get an assist or, you know, start something like that, it makes me feel good.
The modern goalkeeper, Andrew.
Patrick, of course, like one of the big running narratives with Columbus Crew as a franchise, as a club, is the whole Save the Crew movement, because it created such a special bond between the club and the city. That connection between team and fans, does it feel unique even to you guys who have been on other teams before and experienced different atmospheres? Does this feel different because of that?
Yeah. I mean, this is my first professional, you know, organization. So I came in and, you know, that's all I heard was, you know, how, you know, the fans and the team and the city were all kind of connected as one because of the process of Save the Crew. And, you know, we feel it, you know, when guys, when Austin or fans, you know, like Don Garber at the game, you know, they don't forget things. But when Michael Bradley was playing, you know, every time he touched the ball, you know, they're booing because of what he's done and said about the crew in the past. And so, you know, we feed off that. We feed off their energy. And yeah, I think, you know, us playing at home, that we built a fortress there, but it starts with them. I can't thank them enough because, you know, they're incredible and, you know, they've taken me in with open arms.
When you have supporters like that, that are so invested in the football team, that care so much about it, like, it must be unbelievable, the wave of emotions when you win. So when I was watching the pictures at the weekend, I just thought about Major League Soccer for a second. And I thought, How could anyone want to leave that? That is so special. Like, that feels like the peak of professional football. But at some point, players develop, they go on. What's your ambitions for the future? I mean, 22 and an MLS Cup champion, starter for one of the storied franchises in the game in America. Is there something else in the back of your mind you're thinking, well, I want to go further?
Yeah, you know, I obviously want to, you know, achieve a lot. You know, I set high bars for myself. And, you know, I don't know where my journey is going to take me, but I joke with Darlington now. I'm three trophies away from, you know, catching him. So I just want to achieve all that I can achieve, and you know, wherever that's at, you know, I'm grateful for it. But yeah, you know, I want to reach the highest bar. You know, obviously U.S. national team, 2026 World Cup. Like, you know, I have those things in mind, and you know, I'd love to have the opportunity to do those. But you know, for me, it's, you know, it's one day at a time, 1 year, one season. And just kind of, you know, taking it all in and soaking in, you know, each experience that I get.
Well, Patrick, great stuff. What a breakout season this was for you. All the best moving forward. We can't thank you enough for giving us some time in the wake of this, and enjoy whatever it is that is next, the parade, the off season, all of it. Drink it in. Good stuff, man. Thanks again.
Thank you guys for having me.
Great stuff. Patrick Schulte. What a future. Amazing. I mean, what a present. Obviously, I mean, he was such a star.
That's what I meant with my question. Like, you, it just feels, it feels such a great thing to be able to say a guy could probably look to have a career in soccer in America and fully satisfy a lot of dreams and ambitions just by playing in MLS. Like, that was special the other night. It really was.
Yeah, very cool. So building off his comments, yeah, I've been thinking about Columbus and this run that they just went on winning this title, and who kind of has gained the most here. There were a couple names that really hit me, but one of them he really discussed in some detail there, and that's Darlington Nagbe. I think he elevates to another level with this one. I mean, you heard Patrick describe him as maybe the greatest midfielder MLS has seen. Not a lot of four-time MLS Cup champions. Landon Donovan has more with 6. Jeff Agus, Todd Donovan, and Brian Mullen had 5. And then, wow. And then here come Nagby's next. There's a few other guys before, but you know, you can just see it. Like, he's so revered among his teammates. It's not a coincidence, JJ, that he has gone to a number of different places and won at each of them. And I'm kind of, you know, we talked about it on this podcast years ago. I mean, God, we almost 10 years now. I remember, you know, U.S. team sheets coming out and Nagbe not being on it, and him kind of being not really wanting to. He didn't really want to pursue a national team career. He spoke about, you know, back in, what was it, 2020, or I forget when it was, saying that he didn't really want, like, he was more interested in spending that time with his family than going off and being gone for a month, 2 months at a World Cup. You know, that wasn't really a route that he wanted to take. And I always wondered, because you can watch when he plays, he's brilliant. He's such a great player. You always wondered, because he didn't have those accolades and his name in lights with Team USA, was that always in some way going to hold him back? And I hope that getting this fourth MLS Cup, I hope that this allows him to break through and, you know, become like truly the household name among soccer fans in this country that he deserves to be. Cause he is every bit as good as those guys who were playing midfield for a lot of those US teams. It was just not a route that he wanted to take, but he's such a great player, and I'm glad that he's getting his due now.
Yeah. And I remember him as being kind of part of the US soccer culture war, where there were so many people in U.S. soccer media, so many supporters who are like, this guy has to play for the U.S. We have to, like, I mean, he only became a citizen in 2015, but I remember a clamor immediately after that for him to start games regularly. Yeah. He is revered. He is, he's carved out an amazing career for himself, and he's still at 33, a very, very capable footballer.
Yeah. Aiden Morris said about him afterwards, I was reading at MLSsoccer.com. He said, every word that comes out of this guy's mouth, it's just special to me. I mean, that's the clout that he has in that room and in every room that he's been in. He's just that kind of leader. Also gaining the most from this, I mean, look, Wilfried Nancy. I mean, the guy's name has just skyrocketed up the charts of current MLS head coaches in terms of the way he's viewed. I mean, the success he experienced with Montreal and then coming to Columbus and turning around a team that missed the playoffs back-to-back years, the way they play, attacking, front foot, it's what you want when you go to a game, when you turn on a game. I mean, honestly, JJ, if you were an expansion team right now and you could pluck any manager in the league for that club, how many names are you saying right now before his? Like, I feel like Jim Curtin is still in the mix because we've seen him, because he built a culture. That takes time to do that. Maybe Wilfried Nancy will do that too. You know, Chirundolo's in the mix because back-to-back MLS Cups, they've been in a lot of finals. But I mean, Nancy, he's in that group now, I feel like, with this.
No, 1,000%. And also, what's he going to bring to any other club that gets bums on seats? It's excitement. It's exciting football. Like, he's it's not just enough now to be a winning coach. I think you have to win in a certain way, and he definitely does that.
Yeah,
I firmly believe that. I'm just thinking of a lot of managers that get a lot of flack, that, but they win, and he ticks all those boxes, and he's a young coach too. He's top of the tree right now.
Yeah, yeah, he really is. And then one other name I was thinking of. It's so funny the way life works. So it's like, it's a few years ago, I'm in my fantasy Premier League team. I'm dealing with some injuries in my squad. And so I'm kind of like combing through the waiver wire. Oh, Cucho Hernandez, he scored over the weekend, I think. Yeah, let's see. And like, you know, he'll ride my bench. He gets in every once in a while. Like, here we are 3 years later. And this like fringe Watford striker is now like an MLS superstar, MVP of MLS Cup final. It's just... I was just like watching it over the weekend and saying, this is the same guy who was like at Watford a couple years ago. Yeah. It's just like a random Premier League dude. And now he's like in soccer households, he's like a household name now. It's just such a fun story.
Andrew, he has an outstanding journeyman career for a 24-year-old. Deportiva Pereira, Granada, America de Cali, loan, Watford, Huesca, loan, Mallorca, loan, Getafe, loan, Columbus Crew. What a list.
And he could stay, if he wants to be with, that journeyman could end now. Like, if he wants to be a mainstay of the crew for the next 10 years, who's to say that won't happen? It's incredible. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And he got the name Cucho at a young age when his father shaved his head, and it bore the resemblance to Esteban Cucho Cambiaso, who has a special place on this podcast.
He sure does. That's who our most valuable player is named after. And then, so congrats to Columbus. What a triumph. Two titles in 4 years, three overall. But I didn't want to get out of this without at least diving a little bit into the LAFC side, because,
right,
man, three losses in cup finals this season alone. 53 games. That's a lot of physical and maybe even more so emotional wear and tear for one team over the course of a single season. And now they take that into what is probably the most interesting offseason of any club in the league.
Yes.
So the big questions for them, I mean, obviously, you know, there's the Chiellini one. What does he want to do? But he's going to be 40 years old. The big ones are probably Vela and Boanga. So Vela is out of contract. He's going to be 35 years old. And I don't know. I wonder what you think. I don't know what the good outcome is with this one. Because obviously, look, he's the best player in the history of the club and one of the best players in the history of the league. Losing that is a brutal blow. However, he's getting older. And I think you saw some of it at the end of this season. You know, like I just said, the number of games that they played, his production in the latter part of the season wasn't quite up to some of the standards that he set for himself. On August 23rd, JJ, August 23rd, he scored a goal against the Colorado Rapids and then didn't score again. He registered an assist in LAFC's first playoff game versus Vancouver, and then didn't have another one the rest of the postseason. Didn't mean that he was ineffective or not a good player, but he's a numbers guy. He, like, you get tangible goals, assists. He does those things. And it can't go on forever. And the wear and tear is significant. A 53-game season, three cup final defeats, it's a lot. So what is the good outcome here? Do you want him back? Or maybe is this the right time? We always say one of the hardest things to do is to understand when it's time to say goodbye to a legend. Is this maybe the right time where LAFC kind of get together and say, we need to remake ourselves, and this might be the way to do it, is to kind of let him go?
Well, he's still such an influential player, or certainly an influence in the locker room. The question is, do you want to go down the road that Columbus went down when they said, look, we're committed to losing Zellerayan, but we will find a way to make the team productive. And that's the question LAFC have right now. Is there that many players out there that can replace this guy though, Andrew? Like, it's tricky. I'd be of the personal opinion it might be time to let him go.
Yeah, kind of wondering that too. Or unless he's willing to, is he someone who's willing to accept sort of a reduced role? I don't know. I mean, he might have to occupy a DP spot for them. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. There's not an easy answer, I feel like, to that. And then Boanga's the other one. So he made some comments after the game that were more than a little eye opening and made you wonder, because he's under contract, but you can only read into it one way. He is feeling this pull to return to Europe. He was asked if he has an interest in going back to Europe, and he was kind of clear on it. He said, it's a possibility. Yeah, I leave that to the other people. Even if I have a few years left on my contract here, I just have to say that I'm really happy at LAFC, very happy here. But yeah, it's a possibility. I have to return to Europe. I let the club and my agents figure all that stuff out. But as I said, I'm very honored to have worn this jersey and to have played for this institution here.
Oh, that sounds... Oh, no.
A little bit of past tense stuff there.
Oh, don't... I did. That would be... Oof.
So John Thorrington, he was then told about it and told what Belonga's comments were. And Thorrington said, he's under contract. He's the top goal scorer in the league. He's a huge part of how we play. So our plan is absolutely he's under contract for another few years and that he'll be back. We never know what may happen, but it's going to be a hugely, hugely expensive transfer fee if he's not here next year. So here we go. My guess is he'll be back next year.
Yeah. How huge is it going to be for a 29-year-old?
Yeah, you're right.
What does huge mean? And I can understand him, though, Andrew.
Because he sees the writing on the wall, maybe, with Vela. And Bawanga is the bridge to their future.
Oh, yeah. He probably feels that, look, this was great. I enjoyed it. But my bread and butter, my connection has always been to the French game. Maybe there's a club, mid-table club in Ligue 1 that will take him back that he would want to go and play for. And that's where he wants to finish out the best. Like he still has a few really good years left in him.
Yeah.
And
just scored 38 goals this calendar year. It's incredible.
Right. So when you do that in MLS, there's got to be a feeling in the back of his mind or a question that an itch that has to be scratched. And the question is, can I do this in France at a higher level? And that is a tough one. But contracts are contracts. And a guy who's as valuable, I mean, they're not going to let Vela, Chiellini, and Boanga go in one offseason.
You wouldn't think. Although they're a glamour club, so you never know what they can attract to come back the other way.
Yeah, and who are they tapping up? Who are they talking? Excuse me, phrase is incorrect.
Wheeler and dealer you are.
No, I'm not a wheeler and dealer.
No, Harry, no, I didn't mean it like that, no.
Too long since we played that drop, but yeah.
Anyway. So there you go. Yeah. So what a season in the books. We'll have plenty of time to see what goes on this offseason, comings and goings. Obviously, Inter Miami is on the radar right now with the Luis Suarez rumors. But congrats again to the Columbus Crew on an incredible season and a great run in the postseason, delivering their fans an amazing win at home when they weren't able to do that. I mean, they were. It was at home, but it was in the COVID year. So there was like only a couple, I think 2,000 people that were there. So to be able to do it like this.
Just because you forgot it. It still counts.
I didn't forget it. All right. This one was special. And the fact that they did it, beating FC Cincinnati along the way in the manner in which they did.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a truly memorable run. Fun couple games against Atlanta United FC in the first round. Lots of goals. I mean, it's just great. They put together a nice DVD, I'll say that, for the 2023 season, if people still buy DVDs. Sure.
How interesting was it for Patrick to have to think about whether he enjoyed essentially a semi-final or a final?
I know.
More and had to think about. Also, modern goalkeeper, rather than the big save, he had to think about whether a 35-yard pinged pass was more satisfying.
I'll tell you what. I mean, because he's had some run with some of the U.S. youth stuff, the youth setup. If he excels in that, like that's part of his some of his strengths are playing that way.
Yeah.
As he develops, let's see where this goes. Let's just see where this goes.
He'd be what? 25, 26.
Well, I'm not. I don't know that I was looking at this next one, JJ. I just mean in general.
Were you not?
I was not looking at this. Look, you know my feelings on Matt Turner. All right, I'm not gonna. How dare you try to put words in my mouth? I just mean generally speaking. Generally speaking.
Okay. Generally speaking. All right. Generally speaking, we should probably bring this podcast to an end.
This was a lot of fun. Congrats again to the crew, and thanks so much to the crew for providing us with Patrick Schulte on today's show. That was awesome of them to do that. I enjoyed this immensely. Like we said, Thursday night, 9:30 Eastern time, we'll do a live stream on YouTube. Hopefully as many of you as possible can join us. for that. We'll throw out some questions. You guys give us your answers. We'll try to make it as interactive as we can. We'll look back on the Champions League group stage as well. The final Champions League group stage, JJ. It all comes to an end on Wednesday. Just incredible. Hey, I enjoyed this immensely, JJ. To you, I say...
throw the apple into the bin to be daring.
I'll see you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.